Welcome to the What the Data podcast with your hosts, Mitch and Leo.
Hello and welcome to another episode of What the Data podcast. I hope you are all healthy and safe at home. And today on the show, we have Philip. Thank you very much for joining us.
I'm happy to join you here. And I'm great. Weather is okay. And for winter, everything still looks fine.
We had sun here in Berlin today. Actually, I had a sun bath and it was really fun.
I'm jealous. No, it was gray and gray here down at the Lake of Constance, but still, I'm now waiting for snow. So that's the good point of being down here. And we already had snow around us everywhere. So that's really, really good.
The weather was the only reason for me to move to Germany. Actually, they promised me snow every year. And since then, I haven't seen really much snow.
And then you moved to Berlin. Good decision.
Berlin, what can I do, you know?
Yeah, no, Munich, why not? Or even yeah, some off the map place like I am now in Lochau in Austria. That gives you snow. Everything else currently around Germany. Nah.
My wife is also from a very small town in South Germany named Bleiboren. Nobody heard about it.
Nah, I also haven't. No clue where that is.
The Schwäbisch Alps, I think, as they call it.
Yeah. Okay, I'm 5 minutes away from those Alps. There are a lot of Alps around me. I've got the Swiss. I've got the Austrian. I've got the.
Happy you are here.
No, again, really great. Thank you for having me here, and I'm looking forward to us a bit discussing.
We had some back and forth, I think, about KPIs and tracking and e-privacy on LinkedIn.
Yep.
And I'm really excited to have you on the show, and I really appreciate the fact that you join us. Let's start with KPIs, maybe, from my article on LinkedIn that we were talking about together, I think. And MAUs. Why do we need MAUs at all?
Yeah. So I think the basis was a discussion about, actually, MAUs, so monthly active users and daily DAUs, daily active users. And I think if I recall, and God forbid, I haven't recapped the article right now, so I don't have it in front of me. That's maybe something I should do next time.
All good, no worries.
At the core, your article was on point about that the underlying value of just the metrics we have 20,000 monthly active users in its own right is a completely useless metric. Because as we all know, we should report stuff that either contributes towards our bottom line or it contributes towards the overall stickiness of our application. Yeah. So how much value does a daily or a monthly active user actually gain from our app? So maybe your sports app, something like Jamundo or another app. And most of you people don't do daily training, but they do once per week, twice per week, or three times per week. So reporting your daily active users in that context would be completely useless because they would just jump around like crazy. And I think I once read an article about most people train on a Tuesday. I've got no clue why, but so your daily active users on a Tuesday would just skyrocket, and compared to each other day, that would be just flat out. So for me and there, I just love the concept of your KPIs best friends. I think monthly active users and daily active users just need best friends. So for Jamundo, maybe it would be something like lessons done or minutes watched. So stuff that really puts those user metrics into a stickiness or a value created context.
So basically, we need to look at some action, right, that was created from the user together with the mouse.
Yes, fully. Yeah, it's really about that action context, how and why to do it, or what to look at, and then how to read it and how to interpret it.
By the way, your history is super interesting. You are coming from being a restaurant chef, then you became a designer, a developer, now marketing. This is an interesting background.
Yeah, my line of work is quite diverse. So I was allowed to work in a star restaurant in Aachen as a cook, as a chef, for some months. The reason behind it was that sometimes I come around as quite cocky. And in that sense, the chef, the owner, really just wanted to show me my personal limits. Only problem was, I didn't find them there. It was so great fun. It really helped me to understand how to split up my energy, how I can contribute to an already very, very good working system, yeah, of cogs and stuff. Yeah, a kitchen is just so highly, highly performant. And then if you come in as this new context giver, you really have to watch out how can I contribute? Where can I help? How can I help? What can I learn quickly? And that was really, really great. So yeah, and then I've always loved design. So I'm coming from a family with a big art design, interior design background. And in that sense, it was more or less in the family to do something creative. And from that field, I started a small agency with a couple of friends of mine. And from that, then naturally came this whole field of, whoa, there's something called the internet. Let's do websites. From that came the field of, yeah, marketing, online marketing, stuff like that. And that was then more or less my path into the data drug. And yeah, now I'm more or less in between those chairs of marketing, product design, development. So yeah, I code a lot and doing the complete field of data analysis, AI development.
Well, we need this mix, I think, and background to help us actually understand better what we do. But do you think actually that starting from a restaurant or working at a restaurant shaped the way that you're looking at data or the way that you, let's say, cooking data today?
That's a good question. The time at the restaurant taught me about how important it is to understand a customer's needs, really from the perspective. Food is one of the core, or it's the core thing that we need as humans, except water and air to breathe. In the same sense, these are substitutes for solving somebody's major problems. Yeah, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, and I need air for my system to work. And it really helped me to grasp how when people talk, and let's say they sometimes hide an underlying meaning in how they formulate something. So, for example, I was working also as a waiter, not in that restaurant, but in another one. And when it comes around to tips, it really was about not only understanding the order that you got. So, hey, I want a pizza, or I want that hummus, or I want this and this dish. It was about the nitty gritty things that either you knew about them because they were returning customers and stuff like that. And I think this really helped me to sometimes dig a bit deeper into what the behavior, for example, of a user on a website or on an app helped. But not only this alone, also my years and years of website design, of marketing design, just of user experience design, as in combination with this, just gives me, or rather not gives me, but allows me to also sit back and ask the question, does this site really help the user in what we as a company want to support them in what they want to achieve? So yeah, long story short, I think my background helps me nowadays in asking maybe not their questions, but other questions to better understand how we can use data to better serve the customer.
So yeah, so we're talking about the fact that you're coming from the cooking then to the design, and we find it like, also in my universe, the way that I'm looking at stuff, I'm always thinking that cooking is very similar to data. because the user is at the end of the day eating with the eyes. And with when you're seeing a plate of hummus, it's not going to always work, right? If it's looking disgusting, of course, you're not going to like it that much. But if it's going to be something more special, most likely it's going to catch your eyes. What is your approach actually of working with data? So how do you help your clients with the data that you're supplying them? Or what is the way that you're helping them look at something in a different way?
Oh, I really like that analogy of data and food, or the representation of data compared to food. Thanks for that. Maybe I'll steal it.
Copyrighted.
How do I approach? The first step is I try to get to the ground of the actual problem that my client, my colleagues, or whomever I work with or work for actually has. So most of the times you get the request, hey, we want to understand what our potential customers do on our site. And I'm like, yeah, why? Because our revenue is going down. And then I again ask why. And so the first step for me is always to not only understand their processes and their way of working and their way of thinking, but it's also trying to understand what's their actual problem underneath, and if that's something that is, let's call it, solvable through or with data. And the second point that then, once I've understood this, is to adapt dashboards or reports or whatever they then get from me actually to their way of thinking and to their language. Are they experienced with data, or should it air be high level? Who's getting this report or this dashboard? How much knowledge do they have? For example, if it's a marketing report and let's say drills down into Facebook, how much knowledge is there present about Facebook? Or is this something more for the head of, let's say, head of social media, and they don't need such a drill down report? So as you said, yeah, like with food, it has to be liked by the person who has to, let's call it, eat. And with that, be happily surprised by the good taste of the data that they received from me after it went through that kitchen of mashing it together with other stuff, etc. Long analogy about understand the people who will use your reports and understand the most underlying problem that they have.
So we are the gatekeepers, basically. We need to make sure that they understand the why they need the data before we have even supplying it to them. You're feeling hunger. You're feeling you're thirsty.
Exactly.
And then based on it, you answer their needs.
Yes. Especially if you're working together with a client or with a company or within a company that just starts with this complete data endeavor. Because it's a huge, huge change endeavor. Yeah, data is in my eyes, not that much about the tech. It's more about a change in culture and an adaption of transparency throughout the complete organization. And this creates pain. This creates fear. This creates discussion. And you're then there as a translator. You're there as somebody who sometimes even protects the data from those that then try to mush and to pull and to reverse it so that it fits their narrative.
And let me ask you that. So how, when you come into a new company, as you said, mm-hmm. they starting now to deal with data, how do you deal with the fear from the data? How do you explain to them what should they track? What shouldn't they track? What should they actually use or not? And how they can become more focused? How do you help them to focus on actions, on what is relevant?
Mm-hmm. Actually, it again starts with me just sitting there and listening. And just listening to their processes, looking at their company a bit. My background as a CMO for multiple companies then comes into play, because my foot in the door in most parts is always marketing, coming in through the marketing team. And because I can clearly speak their language, I can help them lose that fear of now I'll be judged about my performance of XYZ and shift that into, hey, now you can start learning and create better campaigns, which you can then really pump all your creativity and all your fun and all your new ideas into. So the first step is always listening, listening, listening. And then once I find my entry point, which sometimes is, hey, it'll either be a social media campaign or be something else. So it's really this low-hanging fruit that I'll try to pick together with them to help them with the small little problem that they'll see, hey, data isn't that bad. It's actually quite nice. And then from there on, step by step, I try to grow this plant. I always like the picture of a rose garden, which you then start growing and which grows a bit of chaotically. And then you just cut back the parts that don't really serve that goal. So they can't sting you. And then you just let it grow and grow. And then you do that again until you've got a system in place that people see as a partner and not as an enemy.
I completely agree. And, you know, in the comments we were talking about, one of the conversations we had on LinkedIn, you were talking about the fact that you don't think that everything needs to be tracked.
Mm-hmm.
What will be your must track or not when it's coming to a website? So how do you make the decision of what you're tracking or not?
Mm-hmm. So most tools that you implement on a website will more or less first track everything, which is totally fine. For me, it's less about being tracked, more about stuff that actually then is being used or being imported into a data warehouse or other shenanigans with it. On the other hand, there are a lot of marketers out there that then also want to know if a user clicked on button XYZ or used a filter, blah. So how do I decide, or how do I recommend to find out what should be tracked and what shouldn't be tracked, is basically an important metric about, is this, how hard is it to implement that button tracking or that? So I had a customer who hid internal promotion banners in their menu. Great, great concept. First question that I had was, how are these marketing banners played and used? And I asked that question to understand, if I have to implement the tracking, so the click and impression tracking of that menu, because the menu is hidden and it's one of these super menus that more or less fill out the complete screen once you activate one of the menu points, was really about, do you guys think that these banner spaces actually drive a return on invest? And their answer was yes, because whenever we change a product category within these menu promotional spaces, we see an increase in sales within that category. And I was like, great, perfect, let's track that. On the other hand, another client had a contact us number on the right-hand side, top of their website, very, very hidden. And they were like, yeah, I really want to track if people click on that. And I'm like, would you click on that? And he's like, no. And I'm like, why not? Yeah, it's too far off the screen. And I'm like, okay, so why do you want me to invest time, and this will cost you money, to track something where you already say that you won't even click it? So, as I said, it's investment, so time and money investment. On the other hand, it's potential of learning. How much can we learn through that data point within our reports or within our analysis? And this is more or less the matrix that I then push around stuff like, do I have to import time on site, or do I have to import, let's take the bad example of bounces on a page.
So
quite a chaotic answer. Sorry for that.
No worries. It's all good. It's fine. I think that we are living in a chaos world the more we're looking at data, actually, we find that it's creating a lot of chaos. The question is actually, how are we dealing with it?
Yeah. That's funny. Okay. So, my post today on LinkedIn was actually about that topic, which I hear a lot of times, where CTOs, CEOs, and CMOs just then come to me and say, Philip, why should we work with you? We've already invested XYZ into data and business intelligence and stuff like that. And it hasn't shown any return on invest, and it has even increased the chaos at our organization because now we've got 5 revenue metrics flying around. And I'm like, yeah, you've just completely identified your problem. There's no strategy behind it. And they're like, oh yeah. So that's a good point. Yeah, let's work with you, because you just forced me to talk about it in this manner and to understand the problem. So yes, everybody should start with data, and everybody should experiment themselves in this field. But at some point, and it always comes up to how fast is the organization, the company growing. At some point, if there's no strategy behind it, if you don't have a clear vision or goal for what the data should be used, as you already said, it'll just create bad chaos. And then also this buzzword of purely self-service BI then comes into the room, and then I just grab my stuff and run out of the room screaming, because I've never seen 100% self-service implementation that drove home the amount of value that it could if the people within the company were educated and allowed to fail. To fail in a sense of, your report is wrong, but that's totally okay, because this is the process of learning how to use data. And I think it's exactly this mixture of people not being allowed to fail in their reports, because their reports should be the source of truth. Because all of us consultants and all of us agencies now always say, you can use data to better understand your clients and to make better decisions and yada, yada, yada. All of this holy grail of data. But in the same sense, for the normals out there, the not data nerds, we're making this horribly hard then to actually get a foot into this field, because from now to in 3 minutes, they have to deliver something that drives value, and they have to deliver something that's not wrong. So people are afraid to touch it. And through this fear, they either do nothing or they don't ask for help, or way worse is they just do without looking at the stuff that's already there, because they're then in this pressure to actually needing to deliver. And so you then have a culture of fear, a culture of not allowed failure, and pure chaos that, yeah, then really gives data a bad reputation.
So how do we solve it? Can we?
Yes. We can, but again, it's dependent upon the different cultural styles. So for example, in a US-based company, this is way easier than, for example, in a German-based company or one in the Dachraum, for example. And it's all bound again to this understanding of what is failure and what is the process of learning. And if you look into, and this already starts in the educational systems in all of the more or less basic schools that we have. It's this, I learn something to puke it into the test and then I forget about it. So there's no real fun about learning. But data and the process about using data is about exploration. It's about learning more about my clients. It's about learning more about what works and what doesn't work. And in this sense, I think to really fix this, we would have to start in first grade and, first of all, create a culture of it's okay to fail. Yeah, just stand up and people will be there to help you. And then also carry this into the companies. But hey, we need a fixture now. Yeah, we need a band-aid now. My honest first band-aid is for the C-level, and this is CMO, CTO, CEO, etc., to actually create their own reports and also being allowed to fail and show failure and sometimes actually intentively add a wrong number into their reports. and show the other people it's okay. I've also just failed. You're also allowed to fail. Yeah. We're living in a world where nobody knows what will happen in the next 5 to 10 days. We've got no clue how the ducks will be in the next 5 minutes, if it will go down or up. Nobody can tell us. So how should we actually be able to just use data in such a predictive manner? Yeah. And we can't. It can only show us a direction, a potential direction. And this is something that just needs to come from the highest in an organization to show it's totally fine. I've just failed, and so can you.
So yeah, when we're talking about data, we're trying to, with clients especially, we tell them it's okay to fail. Mm. And I think it's a lot of us are afraid of failing. A lot of us are afraid of coming to our boss and tell him we did a bad job. And I think I saw a very good newsletter that came from Thomas Pettit. I don't know if you know him, but he's quite famous in the mobile industry.
Mm-hmm.
Which show that when there is a great success, there is always somebody who's going to stand in the room and say, it's because of that and that I did. Mm-hmm. But when things are failing, nobody understands why. How did it happen? It wasn't us.
Yeah.
And we try to, at least my approach is also is like, it's okay to fail. It's okay to make mistakes. All the time you have the data to back up and actually understand better what you did wrong and how to fix it for the future.
Yeah.
How is your experience when you come into companies? Are they actually having it? Do they actually have this culture existing out there today? Or this is something that it's really missing and we need to develop it. So taking the data and actually know that in February we've done a mistake, or in November we've done a mistake, and then this is how we're going to correct it for next November. When Black Friday is going to arrive, how are we actually going to react to it?
So a lot of times there is this sense of, yes, we do have a failure culture or some sort of failure culture within the company. But then what's missing is exactly what you just talked about. How do we learn from that mistake? How do I transfer the knowledge that I have right now through this mistake throughout the complete organization? And how do I not only consolidate, but how do I preserve this then created knowledge within something that's not only some sort of Confluence page or Word document or Wiki entry, but something that's living and breathing throughout the complete organization. And that's something where then I currently am trying to find a good knowledge management tool that's easy, that's visual, that enables you to connect ideas in a more visual way. And that may be only something for myself. But I think if we, and this is the same as you just as we had entry-wise, as how to represent data and comparing it to a great meal, to a great feast that's appealing to your eyes, I think knowledge has to be visualized. And if you can visualize this knowledge, if it's easier to understand through its visual form and then only through text, then you're at the point where the learning you had in January will be something that will be applied in November. Otherwise, this knowledge will be lost in the limbo of all the other stuff that's then found in data and lost again. Because let's be honest, there are a lot of companies out there that run experiment after experiment, not on the level of an Amazon, not on the level of Google or as Microsoft, but that run 2 to 3 experiments per month, which would be 1 per week. But where I've seen that there's no clear catalog of what we've learned, there's no clear connection and spreading of the knowledge then throughout the complete organization. Because often these, let's say, website experiments only are shared within the product team and maybe the UX website design team. But these learnings aren't shared with the marketing or sales teams, which then at some point creates this misconnect between you're again building not data silos, but you're building knowledge silos that in my eyes are even way, way more dangerous for an organization, where we'll then land at the point where somebody just says, whoa, this is something that I did. And everybody else looks at him and says, hey, why did you do it? How did you know about that? And at the other hand, it'll be, yeah, something failed and it didn't work out. And then everybody's like, yeah, but I didn't know something about this. So yeah, it's not my fault. You're way faster than in this blaming, I call it blaming economy, yeah, because then it's not about the golden star that your boss puts into your books of mark, into your record, but it's actually then I don't get a blame for this because it didn't blow up in my face. Instead of saying, hey, I found this and this in our report and we're currently planning to do this. Does this actually match? So it's again about opening up the culture about communication, and within this communication also spreading knowledge. And one fix there is, and I have to be honest, it's a concept, yes, that I've also used, but the wording about it is from Christian Lubasch from Dept or before and Lera, and it's about the data dailies or data weeklies, where you just transfer the newest insights that you had within your reports, either throughout your team or throughout the complete organization, either on a head level or on a specific team level, if you're for example working in tribes or stuff like that. And I think this really helps then breaking down those knowledge silos that tend to then create this atmosphere of blaming because somebody didn't do something.
I completely I'm with you on it. You recruited me. I mean.
Yeah, I'm quite passionate about this complete field because, as I said in the opening, data for me isn't that much about tech. It's more about culture and communication and transparency, because the tech is something. Let's be honest, people with brains can easily manage the tech. There's so great tools out there, so many of them, and they're all somehow easy to use if you can read and if you can code a little bit. But creating that change that data actually has within an organization, that for me is the hard part.
So Philip, we're arriving to the end, unfortunately. I think stay and talk with you for hours today,
but we won't.
Not today, but you're going to come back, right?
Happy to join you guys again.
I'm counting on you.
Yeah.
Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit where they can find you? What are you doing nowadays? What interesting projects you have?
So everybody can find me on LinkedIn under Philip Loringhofen. My website currently looks like crap. I'm a freelancer, as I said, in between the chairs of marketing, design, product development, and just data in itself. And currently I'm allowed to help, on one hand side, startups in using their data in communicational ways. How can they better communicate with their clients, and how can they actually achieve growth through it? And on the other hand, I'm, for example, just helping energy provider, so municipality, to better understand their customers and to reduce their churn, which is in the times of price comparison engines and change of energy providers being so easy. This is something very, very important for them. So yeah, LinkedIn is the place to find me and then to discuss about all of these nice topics.
We can end your LinkedIn address also in the episode information as a link. I really appreciate you joining us. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time and for having me again. I wish you a great time.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk to you again.
Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the What the Data podcast.